south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's see how many people we can offend today. I'm sure we will. By the way, the show might be a little noisy here and there. You might hear some hissing and clicks and pops and stuff because I'm on the road. Bear with me on that. Next show, we'll be back to normal. Let's start out with this email from Kurt. It's a long one, so we'll cut out the parts that seem boring. He starts, "Dear Mr. J, expat Kurt K here. Don't use my real last name, please." He says, "I took your advice and got my plan B going a couple years back. I've been living in Mexico 3 years and counting now, and ready to ditch San Miguel Allende, Mexico, and Mexico in general. Though I'll never go back to the U.S., I don't want to live on the gringo tourist trail anymore either. It was a nice soft landing in the beginning, but it does wear on you." He says, "First things first. Lately, you've been talking about Venezuelans escaping their country. Well, I've noticed a great and growing community of Venezuelans here in San Miguel, too." He says, "I know a few of them now, and most of them are professionals who are fleeing. Personally, I've noticed they are more cultured, educated, and well-spoken than the local native middle and lower class Mexicans I see on a daily basis." He says, "I even hear local Mexicans, especially Uber and Lyft drivers, come right out and say it, too. They look at Venezuelans as sort of higher-class Latino citizens who've had a streak of terrible luck. To me, it's very obvious. Even though many Venezuelans are struggling and working at crap jobs here, well below their abilities and education, they maintain their dignity and put on no airs of superiority, even though they have every right to do so, based on their higher education and good manners. Part of the reason I think why they seem so humble is because they're so embarrassed about their failed country. They'll come right out and tell you their country was destroyed by socialism, but they can't figure out how it happened so fast in a country so rich. Even the smartest ones will admit that they too fell hook, line, and sinker for what Chavez was telling them back around the year 2000 when he preached how the big foreign oil companies with their big refineries in Venezuela, like British Petroleum, Texaco, etc., were taking too much of the oil profits. It's about time to kick them out," he said, "and put our own guys in. We all went along with that at first. What a horrible mistake. Now, 1 in 4 Venezuelans have left the country. 1 in 4 are refugees, many of whom were middle, even upper class, and have lost everything." All right, then, Kurt continues, "Venezuelans are very entrepreneurial, too, much more so than the local Mexicans I know. I've met quite a few Venezuelans that have their own thriving little businesses. Restaurants, clothing outlets, delivery guys, they're real estate rental agents, they have beauty salons, driving Ubers, Lyfts, etc. Every Venezuelan you meet seems to have some kind of job. You wonder how that happens after only arriving in Mexico just a few months earlier. They are a positive net effect to the region for sure. The locals would do well to pay attention and learn a few lessons in business and culture from them, but they won't. In time, I suppose there'll even be some backlash, just like there is in the U.S., where the locals resent Asians owning most of the businesses in big city ghettos. And Johnny, it's the same thing here in Mexico. Asian stores and businesses dominate many of the poorest barrios. Makes us expats wonder, too, how does that happen? Asians come knowing zero Spanish, and in a few years they have a store and are driving a decent car, and their Spanish is still awful. Ironically, the local Latinos laugh and make fun of Asians behind their backs, yet they're all doing better, often vastly better sometimes, than the average Mexican sniggering behind his back at them. The locals could do well to pay attention and learn a few lessons in business from them, too. But they won't. I hear Latinos talk. I know my Spanish. I took 4 years in high school. They make fun of Asians behind their backs, but at the same time, they resent the hell out of them. And Latino guys will tell you under no circumstances would they ever date an Asian girl. But that's a story for another time. Anyway, Johnny, 3 years ago when I first came down to Mexico, I was looking for a soft landing, not necessarily the latest, greatest expat destination that's been recently, quote, discovered by international living. By the way, I quit reading international living years ago. I just wanted to get a start, dip my toes in the water. So I left for a soft landing and figured that would be Mexico. I'm in a very good position financially as compared to lots of other expats. I'm 55. Retired and have a company pension of $4,000 a month, so I can live like a king in any Latin American country, really. But lately, inflation's kicking in and prices are moving up fast, especially with real estate and rentals. I was warned not to have my plan B on the gringo tourist trail, but that's where most soft landings are for a plan B destination. They're on the gringo tourist trail. The problem is, Johnny, when you select a Latin American soft landing plan B, you're usually stuck with lots of gringos. They're everywhere, but obviously some people like that. So then are the expats really ruining things? Well, if you're a freedom-loving person who minds his own business, they certainly are. The woke ones for sure love those soft landing destinations. Where else will you find other woke people to hang with? They want to find each other and create mutual admiration societies. And you can't really do that when you're off the gringo tourist trail. Like you said so many times, Johnny, when you're off the trail, you can walk around for hours and hours and never see a single gringo. How the hell are you supposed to find a like-minded woke person under those circumstances? You also mentioned previously, Johnny, it's very hard to describe to a local what woke actually means. When you try to explain it to them in the way they might understand, they look at you in disbelief or just nod. But you know they don't get it. If you want to single out where the woke gringos and expats hang out in any particular Latino town, if you want the gringo gossip, chismes, as they're called, just keep up with the local English news websites there. Check out the local English newspapers and local expat blogs on Facebook pages and email forums as well. Even better, if you want to catch up on the gringo gossip, just have a walk through the popular cafes and breakfast joints that cater to gringos. Expat gringos, especially retired ones, are very gossipy. For some, it's a perverse hobby. Some of them can coffee clutch for hours on end, especially the gray-haired retired ones. Oh, and if you're paying attention, there's always one or two dominant jerks at any given gossip table who put on the airs of an expert expat know-it-all, just because they've been down here 2 months longer than the next guy. There's sort of a seniority system amongst expats. We all find that out once we get here. The one that's been down the longest, he's the old man in the sea, the old sage. Often he's the most cynical, too. The glow is gone. The honeymoon's been over for a long, long time. But still, he'll never go back to the States or wherever he came from. Then he says, as far as gringo coffee clutch gossips, in tourist areas like Tulum, Cancun, Allende, Costa Rica, they get together, whine, and carry on about the old standard complaints. Always the same when gringos get together. It's always the government changes the rules to gouge us gringos. The cops have two standards, one for locals, one for gringos. Anti-gringo sentiment is on the increase. Criminals are moving in to target gringos. Gringo pricing's getting out of hand. Yada, yada, yada. Gringos are so damn predictable. On top of that, the more gringos in the area, the more pushback you get from locals. You hear and read about tales of woe from supposed protectors of local culture. They get together sometimes, even make flyers and signs to attack expats for changing the nature of their city, for being rude to locals, and for driving up prices. This from locals who never lifted a finger to preserve their own culture before the gringos arrived. This from indignant locals who talk about the bad gringo influence behind our backs, and yet still they leave garbage in their front yards and toss fast food wrappers in gutters. This from indignant locals who can't afford to coffee clutch at Starbucks every morning like gringos can. Their resentment sometimes shows. Then, Kurt says, having lived 3 years myself on the gringo tourist trail, I see ironies that are universal amongst expat communities. There are truths to the complaints on both sides, from both gringos and Latinos who complain about each other. But they seem to be mostly a reflection of gringo arrogance. Then he says, I know what gringos are thinking. I'm one myself. We're thinking like gringos with a savior complex. I know what goes through gringos' minds. We're thinking they just don't appreciate what we're doing for them. They're lucky we showed up to save them from themselves. Think of the great first world values and culture we're personally handing to them. Beyonce, Johnny Depp, fast food, Twitter, TikTok, Starbucks, BLM, LGBT, and the Kardashians. Think of it. Without us, they'd be stuck with Zorro, Lucha Libre, bad soap operas, and homemade tacos. There it is. That's my rant, Johnny. I'll be at your next seminar. I need to get the hell off the tourist trail. I need some hand-holding, a little help to get me out of here. It seemed like a good idea at the time, a soft landing and all that. I was one of those people who clung on every word of international living. I quit reading and believing in their marketing crap after my very first real estate deal went sour. The topper was, 2 weeks later, I had lesson number two. I got my phone stolen by a taxi driver. Thet and other lessons have proven the point that where gringos gather, so do thieves. It's only logical. If I was a crook, I'd move to a gringo tourist area too. Why steal from a broke local population when there are so many gullible gringos around? All right, Kurt, thanks for that, and keep on telling it like it is. Owen, you're definitely right. If you're getting a $4,000 a month pension, you are living like a king, pretty much anywhere in Latin America, except certain tourist traps. Speaking of my upcoming November 2022 seminar, the one Kurt mentioned he's going to sign up for. Once again, it'll be a week long, starting Saturday, November 5th, ending on Friday, November 11th. Just go to expatplanb.com and click on the 2022 seminar link for all the info and sign-up details. And remember, if you sign up by September 15th, that's about a month away from when this show first goes out, you'll take advantage of the early bird discounts. After September 15th, we're back to the regular price. Oh, and when you check out the sign-up sheet, you'll see you could pay for it all or in three equal installments. So if you're interested in drinking from the fire hose and getting a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, man, you can't do better than to come to the seminar. It'll be a small group as usual. I don't like to have any more than 20 or 25 people. That means lots and lots of individual FaceTime. Oh, and we'll be hanging together day and night. It'll be a tremendous networking opportunity. Because, you know, that's the most important part of having a Plan B, being able to come down and have a network you can lean on. Because, you see, the people who end up striking out when they come down on that Plan B, they end up going back to the States. They're the ones that did not have the proper network. If you come down and try to do it all by yourself, sometimes you can feel completely lost. Well, you could do that, and sometimes it works out, but it's a good way to spin your wheels for a long, long time and drop a lot of extra dough needlessly. In fact, I occasionally run into a gringo who's been down here a while who says, Johnny, you know what? When I first got down here, I got ripped off for $5,000 or $10,000 by my own lawyer or real estate guy or sleazy business partner, whatever. And I always shock him when I say, you know, you got off easy. Look at it as a cheap lesson. I tell him, I have a friend, a really good friend, who got nicked for $800,000. Come to think of it, it may have been $600. Doesn't matter. It was a huge amount on a deal initiated by his own lawyer in Costa Rica. Where else? That's what can happen if you don't have a reliable local network. But you knew that already, right? Over the years, I've known quite a few gringos who've lost anywhere from $30,000 to $50,000 on usually real estate deals gone bad. Again, because they didn't have a knowledgeable network. It hurts, all right. You get over it. But it's a hell of an introduction to Latin America. And personally, over the years, I probably got nicked for $5,000 or $10,000 myself. But that was a long, long time ago. And since then, I've learned my lessons. I like to think I'm smarter now. And that's the kind of knowledge you'll gain when you come down to the seminar. You'll get wised up so it doesn't happen to you. Of course, that's not the only thing we'll talk about. We'll talk about a million other things. All in the name of transitioning. No, not that kind of transitioning. Transitioning to your Plan B. So go to expatplanb.com, click on the seminar link, and mark off the dates November 4th through 11th, 2022. This time the seminar will be in the Dominican Republic, the DR. And for those of you who've been asking me if you could kill two birds with one stone, that is, come to the seminar, stay on for an extra week, and get the stem cell treatments at that very clinic my brother and I and some of my friends have been to, with great results. Yep, that can be arranged. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, if you have any questions. Which reminds me of a story. About 2 weeks ago, I was with a wealthy Latin American friend of mine. He has a couple of businesses. He's 50-something, and we were hanging out at an all-inclusive resort. And as he was getting more wasted, after all, drinks are free at those all-inclusives, you know. He was getting more and more emotional. That happens with Latinos, you know. Anyway, we were sitting there in our bathing suits, you know. Me in my gringo long-style trunks and him in his Speedo. Ain't nothing worse than a guy with a pot belly and a Speedo. That's one thing us American guys have going for us. As casual and uncouth as we might seem, we don't wear Speedos. That's a European and on occasion Latino thing. Anyway, we're sitting at one of those bars that's in the pool. You know, the seats are underwater and the bar's got a little thatched roof. Well, we're sitting there drinking. He points to the far end of the pool and he says, that is what I'm worried about. That's why sometimes I get depressed. He said, look, Johnny, I'm a successful businessman. Look, I can take my whole family out to a resort like this. But when I see a group of first world people, I know what they're thinking. Deep down, they're very nice to your face, but they're thinking, why can't you fix your country? Why does it remain third world? Why is your country so f***ed up? There's two reasons, really. Half of it's the government. They bog us down with so many rules and regulations, it's impossible to do business legally without paying bribes. The other 50% of the problem is our fault. Successful guys like me. He pointed to the far end of the pool and said, look at my kid with his designer Speedo, waterproof expensive Swiss watch, $300 Ray-Ban sunglasses, the real thing. Anyway, the kid's dad said to me, my kid, nice guy, but he never broke a sweat in his life. Doesn't even know how to change a tire or do a load of laundry. He said, I'll tell you why our country's so screwed up and first world businesses kicked the shit out of us. And why your franchises wiped the floor with us too. Because we let our kids run our companies when we retire. That's how you destroy a business over a generation or two or three. You hire your relatives, your cousins, etc. And when you retire, you pass the reins on, then he pointed into the pool again, to your kids. I said, yeah, you're right. It's a pretty well-known fact in the business world. The easiest way to wreck it is to pass it on to your kids. Though that's common, it doesn't always work that way. But usually by the third or fourth generation, if it lasts that long, it proves itself out. Then he started telling me the story about how he had to hire his uncles and his cousins. His mother and father would push the issue. He'd get calls from his aunts and uncles. He said that might work pretty well if you're the mafia, where it's all about the family and loyalty or they cut your dick off. But my relatives, especially my shirt tail relatives, I don't even know all their names. Their only loyalty is to money, not the business. So he finished by saying, don't let anyone ever tell you we are third world countries because our governments perpetually mire us in the muck. That's half of it, but the other half is nepotism and our terrible hiring policies. All right, it's me, Johnny, again. I never would pick up insights like that if I didn't speak Spanish. Of course, this guy, this business guy, spoke some English. Not real well, but he spoke English. The thing is, though, no matter where you are, as soon as a Latino or Latina sees that you speak some Spanish, man, they throw the door open. They welcome you right into their world. I know if I only spoke English to that guy, he never would have opened up like that. All right, since we're talking about Mexico, here's another crazy email from the Mexican email file. Yeah, you know, I gather up the emails and file them under various Latin American countries they pertain to, all 20 of them. How about this one coming from Mr. M? He says, Johnny, earlier this summer, I came across a flyer posted in Colonia Roma in Mexico City that read like this, in both English and Spanish, quote, are you new here in Mexico City? Are you working remotely? Then you're a f***ing plague, and the locals hate you. Leave now. Wow, that's really welcoming, huh? Anyway, it goes on to say, that kind of language took me aback, but it wasn't anything new. I've been receiving comments just like those on social media for over the last year. Even posting simple videos of me having lunch with my Mexican girlfriend sparks accusations of being called a colonizer, a parasite, and worse. My story goes like this, and I'll paraphrase. This is a long one. In the summer of 2020, I fell in love with a Mexican girl from Mexico City via one of those dating apps, and I moved down there to pursue the relationship. We spent the first year mostly in lockdown in the self-contained, very nice, tranquil neighborhood of Condesa. It felt like our relative bubble of safety in an unpredictable pandemic world. For me, Mexico City seemed like the perfect place to reduce my expenses and focus on immersing myself in a new culture. Then, sadly, after a year and a half together, we broke up. I won't go into the details, but suffice it to say, on top of the heartbreak, I suffered a jolt as my life in Mexico was suddenly turned upside down. I lost my connection and my anchor to the place, he says. My direct connection was severed. He says the relationship that brought me here no longer existed, and after a year and a half of socializing mostly with Mexicans, I no longer had a community. I felt unwelcome and seriously thought of going home, but I decided to stay. There were practical reasons. I had already registered as a temporary resident, rented a furnished apartment, and created a sort of nice, de-stressed lifestyle. But something happened within my next year and a half here. The city has changed dramatically since I first arrived here in September 2020. Back then, 2 years ago, I felt like I was one of the only foreigners around. Every other building on Avenida Amsterdam had a Se Renta or Se Vende sign, meaning things were for rent or for sale. Landlords were desperate to fill vacant buildings, and it was a buyer's and a renter's market. And now, just 2 years later, the same neighborhoods are absolutely filled with gringos. Housing is scarce and rents are rising. English is now spoken so widely it's possible to bounce around between gringo-friendly establishments without ever having to speak words of Spanish. All right, me Johnny here. Sounds like just the opposite of what's happening in my jammy, huh? Where you don't need English anymore. Then he says, while I've always been an enthusiastic promoter of Mexico, I now see the wave of visitors is bigger than most people ever realized. It's having real-life negative consequences that are altering the hopes and dreams of average Mexicans. So, what happened in those 2 short years, the COVID lockdown years? Well, previous to that, a guy named Tim Ferriss, who has a podcast, started out the digital nomad revolution with a book, The 4-Hour Work Week. He talked about working at home or in a third world country, earning income in a strong currency like the dollar, while living in a country with a much cheaper currency like Mexico. And at first, before COVID came, only the brave and resourceful attempted this so-called digital nomad lifestyle. They congregated where Wi-Fi was strong and a lifestyle laid back and much cheaper than back in the States. At first, only brave, young, and single people tried this digital nomad lifestyle, and it was mostly in Southeastern Asia, like Thailand or Indonesia. Then came COVID. The pandemic changed everything. Corporate America went remote overnight. Suddenly, millions of people with salaries pegged to the cost of living in San Francisco or New York were free to work anywhere. Coincidentally, Mexico was one of the only places U.S. citizens could travel during lockdowns. They had very loose and liberal vaccine and testing norms, too. So initially, 2+ years ago, when the lockdown started, most escaped to the beaches of Tulum, Cancun, Playa del Carmen, Sayulita, and Puerto Escondido. But the Wi-Fi is not quite stable enough to work from some of those beachside towns, especially the smaller one-horse towns. For good, solid, stable internet, you had to go to Mexico City. And many did and were pleasantly surprised. And Mexico City, Distrito Federal, as it's called, has many advantages. It sits squarely within the U.S. time zones, making it easy to continue working for U.S. companies. And when the companies do require workers to return to the physical office or plant, it's only 2 hours to the southern U.S. or 4 hours to L.A., New York, or Chicago. Though technically this is very good for the growth of Mexico and the tech sector, etc. That sudden influx of well-paid remote workers dramatically altered the landscape of the city, effectively crowding out middle-class locals, thoroughly pissing them off in the process, just like tech companies did in San Francisco. The main factor is now we have a housing bubble. Most foreigners stay in just a few adjacent neighborhoods in Mexico City, Condesa, Roma, Juarez, and others. In short, these neighborhoods that are trendy for wealthy Mexicans, too. This also attracts tourists for the safety and nightlife. The problem is social media is pumping the shit out of just a few neighborhoods, romanticizing their appeal of living in Mexico City to the exclusion of much less sexy neighborhoods nearby. To be clear, he says, this process was already happening before the pandemic struck, but during that initial moment of shock, many locals living there returned home and failed to make rent. So when locals left or sold out, the housing market took off and went into a big bubble. Worse yet, a positive feedback loop occurred. Many landlords had empty buildings they decided to turn into Airbnbs to cash in on the gringo digital nomad boom. This in turn reduced the stock of available housing, pushing prices even higher, making these once attainable neighborhoods completely out of reach for countless middle and working class Mexicans. Then he says all of this plays out against the backdrop of Mexico's vast inequality, exasperation with the impunity of abuse from elites, and centuries-old divisions along ethnic and class and social lines. In a place where wealth buys power and the lighter skin affords preferential treatment, the sudden arrival of thousands and thousands of wealthy, foreign, predominantly gringo white people pours fuel on that fire. Then he ends by saying thousands of Americans set off on their Mexico City adventure each day, but few realize what a shitstorm they're walking into. All right, me Johnny here. Yeah, shitstorms. I've heard of those. If that doesn't swear you off having a plan B in Mexico City, don't forget to bring a couple cases of toilet paper with you if you do. Shitstorms aren't good when your plumbing can't handle the TP. By the way, that wealthy area in Mexico City where the gringos and expats like to hang, Roma Condesa Corridor, it's called. The rent for a flat, one or two bedroom, ranges between $700 and $3,000 a month. Cheaper than New York, San Francisco, and Chicago by about half. Now, you might be wondering, when they talk about how middle class and working class Mexicans can't afford to live there, I think you'll understand that situation much better based on the fact that just this week, the Volkswagen plant in the state of Puebla, Mexico, went on strike for higher wages. There's 7,000 people working at that plant, almost all of them unionized, and they're asking for a 9% across-the-board wage increase. The union salaries at the Puebla plant range from $15 to $48, not an hour, a day. That means workers there make from $300 a month to $960 a month. So, figure it out. Not one of the 7,000 union workers at that plant could ever afford to live in the Roma Condesa Mexico City district. Not even in the cheapest one-bedroom apartment where rent starts at $700 a month. Meanwhile, last week, you may have heard of this. Drug cartel members attacked a series of convenience stores in the north. They torched taxis and buses, along with 20 branches of Latin America's largest convenience store chain, called OXXO. Wait, there's more. Then we've got that battle you might have heard about in Tijuana on Saturday, August 12, 2022. Began at a prison. A fight between two rival cartels that left 11 people dead. Then the chaos spread outside into the streets of the city, where vehicles and houses were torched and the cartels set up roadblocks on public streets. I know what you're thinking. Tijuana is a shithole. It always has been, but it's a tourist haven for Americans who want to pop over the border, and they still can't keep it safe. Organized crime specialists are saying that the cartels, not the government, are in charge. Here's another little thing about Mexico that's both sad and amusing. Did you know that every drug cartel has clandestine workshops set up to create what are called narco tanks, armored up to plow through streets with impunity? What they do is buy new SUVs and trucks like the Ford F-350 and the Dodge Ram, Tahoe, etc. They add internal panels with a special kind of very light bulletproof steel made by Swedish manufacturers. Now, here's the real scary and unbelievable part. Since 2018, 630 of these armored narco tanks have been confiscated by Mexico's National Ministry of Defense. You can see on the internet photos released by authorities showing heavily modified pickup trucks and SUVs fitted with armored plating, bulletproof glass, machine gun turrets, among other military-style features. These trucks are seen often by the local public rolling down the streets, commonly referred to as narco tanks or tanques monstruos, monster tanks. They even have cartel and gang logos etched into them, so everyone knows exactly which cartel owns those streets. Isn't that nice? Munitions experts who've tested them out say they can absorb repeated volleys of 50 caliber machine gun blasts. All right, I get it. There are some very nice places in Mexico, little islands of gringo prosperity. But here's the question, and it's a very serious question. Is the news out of Mexico, at least in the last 11 or 12 years I've been doing this show, getting better or worse? Need I answer that? Is there any doubt whatsoever? So what does that portend for the future? I wonder. I say go ahead, move there. It's always your decision. The thing is, only someone who's got something wrong with his synapses would move to a place where the news is continually getting worse and worse. However, if the news out of Mexico was getting better, or even staying neutral, that would be a different story. But it ain't. I know, I'm going to get emails.
But Johnny, I love Mexico.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.